Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Car Street Talk. This is episode 70. And today I am blessed to have Brian Tudor here. I know this is a requested episode for a lot of people, so I'm really happy to get this out. Brian Tudor has been around in the Car Street game and Magic game for a very long time. He was making VHS and DVDs on Show Off and Gen X, all these things. So he's been around for quite possibly one of the longest people I've ever had on the podcast. I'm super happy to have him here. So, Brian, I know you want to talk a little bit.
Caleb. Yeah. Yes, you're calling me old. You're calling me
it
old.
It happens to all of us.
And I am. I'm fucking probably ancient to the Cardistry group. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for the introduction. So what do you want to start talking about to start off with?
I know you want to talk about Cardistry history a lot, since you've been around for a while. So,
yes,
I guess just okay. What Let's are some of the things you that. Wish people knew today?
Okay. So, let's hold off on that. I have mixed emotions. And I'm not really quite sure on what direction I want to go with that. So let me think about it for a second. Let's veer into something else and maybe get back to that.
Okay.
But that's cool.
Yeah, that's fine. I know something a lot of people also want to know was just like kind of your takes on modern cardistry. I know we were talking a little bit about Kevin Ho and like some of these things that you've seen. Right. So what are your thoughts on kind of cardistry as it is now?
Well, it's weird. I mean, there's so much great stuff out there. Q-Ron, am I pronouncing his name right?
I think, yeah, it's pretty close.
Unreal. The Super Boomerang, the Anaconda, the Wheel Waterfall. I mean, these pieces, it was like, he radiates spirituality in his work. And I mean, it comes through so clear. He is so unbelievably good. There's so, you know, Yang the Bunny. I mean, he's phenomenal. There's a video of Yui Hogan, who is a montage of 20 different one-hand cuts. It's the best one-handed sequence I've ever seen in my life. So, I mean, there's so much really great stuff out there. And watching this expand is mind-blowing to me. So, and it's also very international. So, yeah, I'm impressed.
It has grown a lot. And obviously, we got people from, like, the Verts, like you say, like Huron, who's these anacondas and these things that are so display-worthy and impressive. Especially to like laymen, but it's even impressive to like magicians and cardistry because it's just crazy. So there's definitely a lot going on. When it comes to cardistry as a whole, what are kind of your thoughts on cardistry being used to sell decks, like videos and or just the deck market in general? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I didn't capitalize on branding a deck of cards. Clearly that this is an avenue, for lack of a better term, where cardists can make money. And I'm all supportive about that, because you can't make money making DVDs anymore. That's long gone. So, you know, I mean, I stick with bikes, right? So it's like, I'm not familiar with the different brands or the flexibility or the sturdiness with the different type of cards. But I think it's great. It's a product. And if they can sell product, you know, good for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think it's interesting. Like you said, you would make money through like DVDs and VHS sales and stuff like that. Whereas, like you said, that's pretty much non-existent. It went digital for a while too, where you would buy these tutorials online.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing like Patreon start to be a thing with like Kevin Ho and some other Aslan, some other creators. But the primary way to make money now is has been through selling decks for a little bit.
The one thing I've noticed too is it really seems that this younger generation is very embraced sharing material. What's the open source material? Like back in the day, magicians would be very protective of their material. This is mine. So you don't see that. And I think that that's a very positive development with this younger generation that seems to be very nice, you know, like magicians back in the day were very, this is mine and you can't do it. Or you did it and this belongs to me. It doesn't seem like that's in this younger culture. So to me, you know, but like back in the day, magicians, that was a thing, you know, this is my material, you know, this is what I'm going to publish. I'm going to have my name on that. You know, I felt guilty to that, you know, so, but so it's kind of nice where you don't see that.
Yeah. I think it is interesting. I mean, just with magic in general, like there's that whole secretive aspect, but they also like don't want the layman to know how things are done so that it doesn't spoil the trick or like it's more impressive. Whereas cardistry, it's impressive no matter if it's spoiled or not, right? Because it's something that's skill kind of based. Not that magic isn't, but when you know how a magic trick is done, it becomes slightly less impressive. But if you know what how a cardistry thing is done, it can still be super impressive, if that makes any sense.
It does. So whenever you try to explain to a layman on how something works, there's nothing but disappointment. That's going to be the reaction. It's nothing but disappointment. Mm-hmm. It seems like with advanced card flourishing that the more that they can understand the development or appreciate the manual dexterity feat, they appreciate it more. So it's like on the spectrum here with magic, you know, it goes negative. With cardistry, it goes positive with having that, you know, material like recycled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I'm also interested about kind of the creation process of these DVDs and VHSs, because it's something that, like I said, doesn't really happen too much anymore. So what kind of work went into creating a DVD or something that you would sell for 50, 60 bucks that you would want people to be excited to purchase?
You know, it's weird. So you know, I was talking with Kevin Ho maybe about a week or two ago about this. And I was kind of saying that in the concept of developing and perfecting material, I do it in isolation. You know what I mean? I'm shut off from everything, no stimulation. And in that process can be suffering, you know? And I believe like that's how you can get better. Now, Kevin kind of like this jam session. I hate that term. I hate that term, jam, personally. You know, he can, like, he's like, has the understanding that you can work with people doing stuff and develop things, which I don't understand. So, like, I'm not, you know, for me, it's like I will get a piece of material created or somebody else or whatever it is, and I'll just hit reputations on it. That's what I do. Like, and I'll hit a set, you know, back off, do something else, hit another set, and you know, analyze it, maybe shoot it, look at it, hit another set. So I mean, it's, and I don't do that with any, like I don't talk or communicate or show material before I shoot it. I mean, so I, you know, you see these jam sessions, you see these kids and they're like doing stuff together. It makes no sense to me, man, but it's good. I mean, I think it's, you know, that's just me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how things have changed. Like you said, there's what we call jams or meetups and stuff where we'll work on things together, which didn't really happen you know, I would say 10 years ago or maybe even less, it's becoming more and more common. And especially when COVID happened and like everybody realized that they can contact each other through Discord or video calls and get more comfortable with it. I think with that has come more collaboration.
And then you kind of have to also understand that the scene has grown. So like before, I mean, there was people doing flourishes before Show Off. I mean, you know, Jerry Sanowski and Randy Shirley, Lee Asher, DeVoe, all these people. But it's not like we were tangibly hanging out. We didn't have this technology where we could connect with people online. And so it was, I think it was just more isolated in general, you know, and the scene was a lot smaller too, you know? And like, even like with the Bucks, I've known when they were kids, you know, and, you know, we would show each other our stuff, but it's not, there wasn't a development. It wasn't like we were, you know, there wasn't a, this jam. It was like, this is what I do. This is what you do. This is what I do. This is what I do. This is what you do. So I don't know.
Yeah. And then for you personally, did you ever deal with like editing the videos for these DVDs and things like that?
No.
So that was given up to like another company or person?
I mean, depending on what product it was, but no, yeah, I never did any post. I mean, what I would do is I would go in and do like the EDL and splice in the timeline. And then like a professional back in the day that knew whatever, like if it was a Premiere editing, they would go and make the effects. And I mean, it was all relatively basic. I mean, there was the products I did were terrible, really. But so it wasn't really anything fancy, but, you know, I would splice in what I liked on the footage, like the takes that I liked, and put that in the timeline. And, and then the rest, like the effects and the transitions and the titles, was done by somebody else. I should have learned it though. And I regret not learning it. And it's on my list of stuff to learn, actually.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting. Like nowadays, that's a lot of people will get into video editing or a videography using a camera and for photos and video through Cardistry.
Definitely.
Just so that they can show it off that the best that they can. So in these DVDs, you released a lot of your own moves, a lot of your own creations. What have been some of your favorite creations you've done over the years?
Well, I'll tell you this. One thing is like, with the Revolution cut, which was the very first thing that I did on Show Off, there's nothing that I could ever come up with will remotely close get to that status of recognition. Like the very first thing that I did, first thing I created when I was maybe 11 or 12, and not even created, that's not even the proper term, just it's so basic, it's so easy. It's not even like, I can't even claim that, but nothing that I will do, and I've tried to put out pieces that will get to that type of plateau of recognition, is so that's like absolutely impossible. So I think, I don't know. I would have liked to see the Tudor Shuffle 3 be done. And I, you know, that alignment and the interlocking of the Pharaoh Shuffle, I think is great. And I don't see anybody do that. And I would have thought that that would have been, I thought that would have got more recognition because Bad Habit was really popular where you're splitting off, you know what I mean? You're that to split up for that lineup. So I was kind of surprised, that didn't, I mean, I haven't seen anybody do it. Material wise, let me think. I don't know. I mean, I'm primarily working on the Sybil 5, which is a retention going through all the different types of Sybils. Sybil 1, Sybil 2, or what the hell happened to Sybil 1? What the hell happened to Sybil 2? The bad habit variation, having a full deck retention at the end of that. That's in collaboration with like hitting the Tudor cut. I'm doing the overhand spring. So, and then the climax of that is having a full deck retention at the end through a fan. Some other pieces like speed is in that. So that's kind of currently what I'm working on now. I don't know. The Revolution Cut was the winner. We just done that and gave up. And fucking,
you know, it is interesting though.
There's no topic. The weakest, shittiest thing that I put out, the very first thing that I did.
Some of the most basic stuff is what like is grows in popularity. Yeah, that's what people learn to start out with.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so.
So I mean, yeah. I know it's the same thing with Kevin Ho. Like I know we talked about him with the backdrop.
Say it again.
Kevin Ho with backdrop, like a very.
I would have to see that piece to really. I'm familiar with his work. I've gone through all of it. Where he does it over the. Love it.
Yeah. So that's probably what he's most well known for, but it's one of the most basic moves. But the thing is that's what people learn, just backdrop.
Backdrop. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's great.
But yeah, it's just the things that people will learn to start off with. How did you kind of get into magic, I'm assuming, and subsequently cardistry? What kind of piqued your interest about it?
I got into magic shop. Like anybody that's old like me, we all got into magic through a magician or a magic shop. So it was a magic shop with me. And it was a great one. I mean, it was Jerry Griffin's California Magic and Novelty. It was right down the street from where I was living. And that's where I'd go and hang. So, and the linear action was like buying tricks, trick decks, packets, and then material. And I came across like the big name, the big card name, was Terry Leggero, who lived in Lake Tahoe. He would come out and visit to the magic shop. He was like a god. And I saw greatness. I mean, I literally had this all fuck moment, like, holy shit, dude, this guy is so good. And I was like, that's what I want, you know? So, and I started studying under him. He had a book called Pasteboard Presentations. Very, very good. It was very, he was very fast rhythm with his climaxes, and he would have that interwoven with his audio pattern. So it's like he would hit climaxes nonstop in his routine. And his mechanics was very, like, very reduced. So it's like he can get a slight and get two climaxes out of that. And it was like that tempo of just hitting you, man. It was, you know, so that's what got me, like, I'm putting my chips in, and that kind of the start for me.
I do want to just take a second to look at some of the comments real quick and just acknowledge some people in the chat. So we got Forgotten Time Channel saying that he liked Gen X for him was the biggest impact for him. And then Isidoro Channel said that he thought Show Off 2 had the best production, but I just want to shout out some people in the chat. Forgotten Time Channel also said that he started at the Magic Shop too.
Wait, who?
It just says Forgotten Time Channel, so I'm not sure.
Okay, but he's not talking about California Magic and Novelty, right? No. He's talking about at a magic shop.
Yeah. So for you growing up, what was your kind of practice routine for learning other people's material? I know you said you like to kind of like go solo and really just repetition, but was there anything else to learning other people's material?
So yeah, I mean, that was the thing, is like I studied under Terry, and then that kind of developed to me also studying under Paul. So it was like back in the day, we had teachers, you know what I mean? Like we all did. Lee had a teacher, Joshua Jay had a teacher. Like we all had mentors. Joshua Jay's mentor was Trey Hoosier. And you know, Joey Burton, I don't know if you know who he is. He played a big, we were all these young kids doing visual shit, not Joshua Jay though. Joshua Jay was like powdered, you know, and we all kind of knew each other just being, you know, on this, you know, convention, national platform, kind of, you know, hidden. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, I would study like personally. Now I bought books, but I didn't really learn too much from books, man. It was really firsthand. Hey, this is how you do a trick deal, you know, or this is, you know, and that's kind of how it goes. So, and the funny thing is like from learning from Terry and learning from Paul, I ended up ultimately moving down to LA to just study under Paul, who was, I've never seen anybody better. You know, I'm not saying this being biased because of, you know, studying under him, but I mean, he was next level. He still is, I guess. Well, he's old now, but all what I learned from both of them is that learning material, like it's all about developing, the value is creating and developing your own material. That's like the ideal, that has more value than anything that you can learn from anybody else. And they both taught that to me, you know what I mean? It took me a long time. And there's a development that you have to get into. You have to learn other people's shit to kind of like learn how it works before you can start just creating shit. Or you can learn somebody else's material and make a variation of it. And sometimes just working on material, things will just start to develop. You know, you kind of just follow that road. Like I'm hitting this and the next thing you know, I'm doing something else. So, you know, anything, that's what I believe is like anything, no matter if it's not going to have the shock value of something that's out there, it's the value of your shit, that's what's important. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. Which was kind of hypocritical because I'm making products back in the day, like learn my stuff. But yeah, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
On a relatively small scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like other people like learning your moves then? I mean, obviously you put out these DVDs, like you said, but do you like seeing other people do like Rev Cut or Tudor Cut and things like these?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, what's good is good, you know? So if I'm looking at like the Anaconda, or if I'm looking at some really spectacular piece, you know, that's where my appreciation is. Maybe, yeah. So it's like, I've seen people do my material that looks really good, and I appreciate that. For the most part, I don't see that. But that's just kind of the way it goes. So I don't know. My appreciation is for what's good. And that's a mere fraction of that comes from me, really.
Mm-hmm.
From what I put out. So. Yeah.
So you've worked under and with a lot of well-known magicians and flourishers. What have been some of the more noteworthy ones? I know we've already talked about some, but.
Okay. So I don't know what you mean by work with. Now, like I worked with the Bucks when they were growing up. I didn't really work with anybody. I kind of was independent, isolated. You know, I would hit a product and then I would stop for a year or two and get back in and then try to make another product. And so I wasn't really at Access. And I think that was a bad move on my behalf. I think that, yeah, I know that it was a bad move. And that's something that took me a long time for me to understand. Like, I really didn't want to be associated and integrated into the community. And that's regrettable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So
I guess what I meant work with, I meant more so like meet or interact with. So you met like David Copperfield, right?
Yeah. I met David Copperfield. And I know Kenner. There's a lot. It's weird. I love David Copperfield. David Copperfield's great. Always have since I've been a kid. Love him today. His assistant, Chris Kenner. I don't know. There's a lot to get into. I'm sure that you know that, like everybody, Kenner doesn't do any cardistry, right? You know this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he has received all this, the narrative of being the originator of this monumental development in this art form, you know, and it's, he's credited through a publication that wasn't his too. So I'm sure you know that too, right?
That I did not know. I mean, I know he's credited, obviously, but I don't know what publication.
So the material came from Troy Hoosier originally, and he was the one that was demonstrating the material. I knew this even before I titled What the Hell Happened to Sybil. That was another regret. I shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad, man. I mean, the narrative that's held from all these people that he has supported for him to have this credit, I think, is disgraceful. It's inaccurate. So, you know, he doesn't do any cardistry. Why is he even being referenced? And, you know, yeah, there's a lot to get into, but I'm not feeling like pulling the trigger on that just because primarily I haven't really done my homework. I feel, you know, like I kind of want to be ready.
Yeah.
That's on me. But this is a conversation that we can have in the future for sure. You know? Also, this is my first podcast.
Yeah.
You know, apprehensive, trying to feel it out. It's kind of cool, though. You know, it's nice to talk. I think, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you ask me questions. It's, and what you ask me, I feel like I learn, you know, because I feel like this Stone Age barbarian that is not knowledgeable to, you know, the different cards, the moves, the artist. So it's like I'm kind of getting back into it and I'm learning too. So that's kind of cool.
Well, it's interesting too, is like you got people like me that are more recently into cardistry. Like cardistry history isn't super well preserved, I feel like, because it's such a small niche and because so much of it is online, it can just get deleted or people will delete their videos and then it's just gone forever. Unless somebody backed it up. So it's interesting to get like people like you or Kevin, or I would love to have Dan and David on at some point that have been around for so long, kind of speak of the earlier days.
Yeah, you know, it's weird, man. I mean, I was listening to the Kevin Hope podcast with Brandon Connor, and he made a reference saying that the system was sped up. And I just heard, this like a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. Now, let me say this, okay? I'm very proud of Dave and Dan, and they're like, I remember watching the system and I remember thinking like, fuck, they got really good. And all, you know, yes, I'm very, very proud of them. And it was a very, it was beautifully shot, man. And not having those audio explanations, I thought was genius. And how they've grown. They were like really cardists. I'm a card magician, you know. Mm-hmm. They were like, no, fuck that shit. We're just doing this, you know. So yeah, I'm proud of them. I'm not hating on them. We turned into competitors. I rarely hear from them. I'm not happy on how kind of that developed. I was definitely at mistake, but you know, I don't know. There was some fault that I had with kind of, you know, I don't know, being on good terms with them. I was really a fucking asshole, to be honest with you. So, but I wish them well. And they know that, and they know. So I don't know. So you're talking about Dave and Dan. And I don't know. What were you asking me? I was just saying
that like you said, it's interesting to see how cardistry is now. But for people from my perspective that are more recently into cardistry, it's interesting to hear your guys' perspective on things, because so much of cardistry isn't well preserved, or it's not well taught. Like, you don't need to know the history of cardistry to do cardistry now.
Yes. You know, yeah, there was a lot to get into, man. Devo was a big player back in the day. I'm so afraid that I'm going to mispronounce his name because he was such a huge influence. Jerry Sanowski. Am I mispronouncing his name? God forgive me if I am.
I don't know how to pronounce it. But you know. He was the...
Cuts,
right?
The funny thing is, like, he didn't have an influence on my stuff, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, he was really the father of just being pure fucking flourisher, you know, and he was great and popular. So you know, I would also say like Lee Asher didn't get credit that I feel like he really deserved, because, and I knew him when we were kids too, and he really kind of, he was very new age in the sense of making card magic visual, which was very flourish like, you know. And he was making those type of products, had that new vibe to it. And so, I mean, it wasn't necessarily like two-handed cuts, multiple packet cuts, even though he did that. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I think that he should definitely be in the books, man, personally to me, you know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's hard. I mean, the thing is, no one should get any credit for being originated. Like, it's on a spectrum. It's on a timeline. Everybody kind of plays a part. I did play a part. The Bucks played a part. The Bucks played a bigger part than me, you know, but there's a whole bunch. You have Houdini that's doing cardistry shot in the 1920s, right?
Yeah.
A great shit that holds up today. So it's weird. It's like everybody has, you know, it's on a timeline filled with lots of people. So, yeah, I don't, you know, I guess that's it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could. Yeah. So. Mm.
Where do you see cardistry going in the future? Do you have any
no idea,
any dream future? Are you just excited to see?
No. Um, Yeah, I would like to see retentions get more popular. I don't know. There's no limitations, and you know, limitations on people creating. I don't know. It's growing. I like to see that. I hope it still keeps on expanding. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any predictions about where this might be going in the future?
I don't know. It's something I've been trying to think about because it does feel like we're creating so much right now, it feels like, but none of it's like sticks, right? Like none of the moves really, there's some moves that come out and yeah, like they automatically become staples, but it doesn't feel like we're making staples anymore. We're just creating like variations or combinations of the staples, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So like claiming ownership over some of these moves that people are making, it's like at what point can you even do that because it has a Charlier cut in it or a rev cut in it or whatever, like it, or has the Z grip. So I don't know. It's harder to like recognize moves because there's so much now and it's so combined.
No, you're right.
I don't know.
You can't really. The thing is like you can have a piece and the appreciation for that piece, but yeah, to break it down material wise can be complicated because there's a bunch of stuff in it. I don't know. I mean, you know, I know very little, you know, I really, and I'm not familiar with a lot of people's other stuff. You know, I really have been isolated. But I don't know. I mean, I would say that it seemed like the younger generation really started hitting the fan hard, which is funny because I didn't care about fans, and these kids have capitalized on it with their spring fans. I like to see that. Also, I love to see aerials. You know, aerials are great. Any type of drop action where you're, you know, like the Anaconda or something like that. Love to see that. Two-handed cuts. I don't know. I mean, I would try to make a recommendation of if you're doing multiple packet cuts, man, try to at least go for having a retention at the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. One-handed cuts, man. There's Yui who again. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's Vietnamese.
Oh, fuck, dude, he's so good, yeah. Man. Yeah, he's so good.
Yeah,
Kevin did the editing for that. He sent it to me. Jaw hit the ground, man. You know, so yeah, I mean, dude, one-handed cuts. I love one-handed cuts, personally. So I don't know. I don't know where, I would like to see people get better and grow, ideally. Mm-hmm.
Are you working at creating any magic or cardistry, or are you still active and using a deck of cards essentially?
Yeah, so I'm gearing up to shoot. And I have material that was never done, like it never shot. So, and one of the pieces, featured piece, is like the overhand spring, you know what I mean? Which that's a mild version of what I'm going to be shooting. So like I'm rehearsing getting ready for that shot like as we speak, so I'm like I'm back in the game, and it's been a long time. It's been maybe 8 years, something like that. It's been a while, dude. Time goes by quick, bro. It goes by quick, man. It really does. So yeah,
that's great. Yeah, I know I want to work on getting more active and learning things and creating things again because I've been out. Wait, I don't know.
Caleb, let me ask you this. What are some of the powerful pieces that inspire you?
That inspire me?
Pieces that you look at and go, oh, my God.
I mean, there's the like showboaty stuff, like the stuff that's going to impress everybody, like springs and anaconda. And obviously you have to have like appreciation for those, but I do really like.
That's more. What I'm saying is like that left to right. That's where the money is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it's, you got all this distance where you're really.
Yeah. It's so like expanding.
Not so condensed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, that stuff looks really great.
I think that's what's interesting about aerials too, like you said.
That's another thing too. Yeah, it
covers a lot of space, whereas with packet cuts, you're in this.
That's super boomerang. Holy shit, man!
So I do think those are like the most impressive, especially for, and they're probably like some of the funnest as well, I would say.
Yeah, totally.
But it's so hard to create in that space.
What's that?
But it's so hard to create in that space and make something like,
oh, no doubt. Yeah,
because it's so much has already been done.
I mean, they say, or one thing that I learned, which really inspired me from Terry, was like, he made some type of statement saying like, you'll never scratch the surface of possibilities of things that you create. So that's kind of a good mindset to have, is like, no matter, you know, there's, you'll never, like, it's infinite. You know what I mean? Did I mispronounce that? Like, it goes on forever.
Infinite.
So that's kind of like the ideal state, easier said than done. I mean, yes, there's limitations and, definitely the aerials are more challenging things to fucking develop. Make no mistake about it. Yes, I definitely agree.
Well, what you said with like infinite possibilities and stuff like that, like I think everybody has like a dream move, or at least I know I've had dream moves where it's like, if that's right. I was good enough.
It's about dreaming. That's how you develop. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if you know who Dimitri
is. Crazy and dreaming. Yeah. That's exactly what you nailed it.
So I don't know if you know who Dimitri Arlieri is, but he's a cartist who hasn't been super active as of lately. But I think he has like a dream move, he said, where it's like you do a fan and then a aerial.
Are you saying a dream? Okay. That's not a name of a piece, right?
No. I'm just saying like there's this something that's possible, but seems like it could never be done or you would never be good enough. So like for him, I think this is something he said that he has thought of, like doing it, the card and fan throw, but it's where it goes every card and then it creates the giant fan.
That's awesome.
So that would be seemingly impossible, but it's also.
That's fucking impossible. Possible. Yeah. He needs to give up on that one.
He said, but there's stuff, like so much stuff out there that you could dream of that is possible, but probably
that's what you want to. I think I know who you're talking about. He's really good. I'm trying to look him up. Can you give me the spelling of his name?
I think it's Dimitri Arlieri. Yeah, but yeah, Dimitri Arlieri. He did like stuff with cartistry touch.
Okay, this dude.
I can't really see. Yeah.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's great. I've seen his work. Okay, so and then you're saying that he was trying to do.
Well, I think he just had.
He was trying to do a Pharaoh shuffle with. Dropping cards into the fan.
Yeah, just individually throwing them up.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think he was actually trying to do it, but it's just the idea of something that is possible, but you couldn't do. Like, you would have to be insanely good.
That's impossible. Okay, there are limitations. No, it's not. You want to have, I'm being silly when I say that. You know, here's what's crazy about developing material is that if you start off trying to do something, you might not get it, but it might develop into something else. And what's really interesting is that when you work on something, that work goes to something else that you can do. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, it's this weird, it's a development with your dexterity. So, you know, yeah, man, I mean, swing for the fences, man.
We had someone in the chat, Christian Kirk, he wanted to ask how many versions of Revolution Cut have you come up with?
There was five. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Four and five was on Show Off 3. I think Rev 3 was on Gen X. And Show Off 2 was Revolution 2. And then Show Off 1 was on Revolution 1. Yeah, collectively there was five. The fifth one looks really good. The fourth one is really terrible. The third one is actually the best. The second one isn't very good. And the first one is super famous, super popular.
Mm-hmm. So, have you watched other people do tutorials of Rev Cut and like, What do you think of other people doing tutorials of that cut that you made?
So like, it's so basic, or at least that's maybe, or saturation of, I mean, it's really, I mean, if someone doesn't want to title me for credit for that move, it's kind of like, okay, I mean, it's not a piece. It's a very, like, the first half of that cut came from me trying to learn a triple one-handed cut. And I just put the packet that was inside my first finger and I pushed it forward, and that's what finished, you know, the revolution. It's so easy. It's almost not a thing, you know, it's almost like, I don't know. It's fun to see it integrated. It's fun to see it like, hey, you know what? So, but I don't know. I mean, they want to do tutorials about it. Man, that's great. Good for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to see your stuff out there.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I think we all do. You know?
Mm-hmm. So when you were like releasing the DVDs and being super active, was that like your main form of income? Was that how you were making a living?
Yes. Yeah. And then that stopped. Yeah. Like back in the day, dude, you were able to make real money. Like you had to have like a selling product. You know, but like Show Off, like Generation X, I mean, they sold for a long time. The retail was ridiculously high. You would get like, you know, how it worked was like the middleman got 20, the retail got 40, you would get 40%. So like on a $50 retail, I would get $20 per, you know, thing sold. And my shit sold for a long time, sold around the world. So I was getting, you know, grips of money every quarter, and I was able to live and screw around. But that all ended. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's been long gone. And sad, too, because it's like, and, you know, like now I worked for a marketing company. I ended up working for substance abuse, mental, you know, it's like you can't self-abstain. You can't do your, you know, you can't. You have to, like, when you're an adult, you have to fucking survive, you know, you got to pay bills, and not having that, those products that you can make, you know, not getting the revenue, it's like it kind of stopped me from doing the art, you know. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
And I was angry. I was very angry about it too. You know.
Yeah. But,
you know, there was a lot of transitions I didn't make. I didn't try to brand a deck of cards, and which I should have done. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things I didn't do, but the revenue from the products back in the day was, yeah, that was legit. I mean, if you're able to sell, this shit sold around the world, man.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I think it's interesting. Like you said, like you don't, if it's not your job to do magic or cardistry, then you have to spend time doing something else. Then it's less time that you have to work on it.
So yeah, that's why, like, when you asked me about what do I think about all these different brands, it's like with cards, it's like, yeah, if they can do that and make money, that's good for the art form, because they can still kind of like do their craft, you know, they can do their material. And so I think that's great, because it is open source now. I mean, Blockbuster went out bankrupt 15 years ago or something crazy, you know, I mean, no one's tangibly buying discs, you know? So.
Yeah, I think we saw a switch from like disc and like VHS to the kind of deck branding with Fontaine and Art of Play with Endate and stuff like that. And then I think now we're starting to get to a point where that's starting to almost, it's not going to completely die off because everybody needs cards to do this, but everybody now that's super into it, like me, we have hundreds of decks, like we don't need to buy more. So like right now we're seeing kind of a decline in playing card deck sales when it comes to like,
that's what Kevin decks. Told me. He was like, yeah, the marketplace is oversaturated. I mean, I know that the Bucks made millions off their branding, their deck of cards, man, and good for them, dude. I mean, shit, you know. Yeah, I wish I fucking got into that. So but yeah, that's what I heard. I heard that the marketplace is over, but maybe that's how it is at the moment. It's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems like there's a collection aspect to people collecting cards. So even though they might have a lot of cards, they're not going to use those cards, but they want to collect them. So, you know.
Yeah, that's something I noticed too. At like,
I couldn't tell you the difference of, you know, I guess the flexibility compared to the strength of any of those decks besides
808,
Bicycle, Tally-Ho, Tally, you know, like I don't, the Fontaine cards, I've never even held them in my hand, you know, so.
Yeah.
The thing is,
they're all made by the same companies like USPCC and
stuff. Yeah, that's what I hear.
So there's only limited amount of customization you can have in the feel of cards.
It's mostly down to design. Yeah. Yeah, it's designs, different designs. That's what I thought.
So I'm just interested what's going to be, if there's even going to be some type of potential switch to where the main generator of revenue could be in the future. Now that it's gone from like selling tutorials in whatever fashion to decks, to if it's just going to stay decks or if something potentially else would come. I don't know. Not saying I have an answer at all. I'm just something I'm thinking about right now.
I mean, the thing about tutorials is this. I mean, there's so much content out there that's free, you know, like Ekaterina. Right. She's doing, her explanations are great, but she's so popular, dude. She's making money on her posts, which is not, you know, it's weird to get into the social media game and get the followers. And I mean, you really got to be famous to try to even make it now, you know, and that's tricky in itself. I don't know, man. It's it's the Patreon thing. I've heard about it. I know that Kevin does it. It's tough, man. It's this open source generation, which is good, but you know,
I don't know.
I ran a Patreon briefly too for the podcast when I was like super active and doing like trying to do once a week. And like, even with that, like it's so much effort for not a lot of money for some of this stuff. And it's probably better for Kevin Ho and some people that are more well-known, but like you said, you do have to be like super famous or a lot of followers to make.
Yeah. And if you are, you can just get money, if I'm not mistaken. I really don't know that much about it.
My understanding is that like, if you have a pop-in channel and you have followers, you'll get paid from those posts from Instagram or YouTube or whatever it is, you know, not retail based, but from the company directly, because you're getting that, I don't know, streaming, I guess. I mean, I really do not know, but
just heading back to the chat real quick.
Yeah.
Orlando wanted to ask if you retained the rights to the videos that you made. So like if that was something you could combine or release, stuff like that.
Well, no, I mean, I don't have the rights to print the products, but I mean, the marketplace is really diminished, you know, and it's, you know, if it's my material, I can reshoot it. But there's no money in making a product and selling it. I mean, these kids can download the shit for free, right?
Yeah.
You gotta fight with free, man. That's gonna be rough. So you know, you gotta keep in mind though, like there's small marketplace product, and it's weird, man. I mean, yeah, there's just, I don't see that there's any money in those products now. Maybe that will change, but yeah, I think it's Patreon, and if you're gonna do it, or you really just want to become famous, really famous, you get a ton of followers and do like YouTube free videos and get paid that way, subscription based from, you know, that's what I think, I guess.
I mean, it would just be interesting to see how things progress. Do you still perform magic professionally at all?
No. No, it's been a long time. No, I've been completely out of the game until maybe about 2 months ago. It was weird. I was going to get back into like marketing just to make more money. I was working for this other substance abuse mental health program. And like in that transition, I was like, fuck it, let me get back into the cards. And I have material like that I want to get out there. And I also wanted to kind of maybe not have a retirement, like a better goodbye than my disgraced career, you know? So, and that's another thing too, about like all this shit with Kenner, it's like, man, and this narrative that's held, it's like, dude, I just don't want to feel like a fucking asshole anymore. No one else will talk about it. It's just like weird, man. So it's like, I really want to have this positive vibe, you know. I want to get the Overhand Spring out there. I think that can change the game. The spring, the Sybil 5, going through all those different variations, holding that retention at the end. It's like, I genuinely feel like I want to get those pieces out there, which I've been meaning to do. And kind of have a nicer end, you know. And mechanically, I'm good. I mean, like, it's not like I don't have the ability of hitting that technical shit fast. I mean, it's still there, but yeah. So it's like, you know, I have this window just kind of want to get the stuff out there and, you know, hopefully kind of put a positive stamp out there. So I don't know.
When you were recording, like the heckler, I forget if that's just what the DVD called, but
yeah,
the things, were you putting on like a persona of being like a little bit more cocky, or was that just you? Like, does that, you know?
Okay, so here's the thing. Like, the problem with that was all completely, well, I don't know. That wasn't a live performance. That was me trying to show the material. Like, I don't know how to put it to you. Like, we couldn't shoot it as a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was the material is interactive. Like, how you realistically have to shoot it. It was like a pretend performance of what you can do to demonstrate the material that I'm teaching in the product.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out really bad. It was shot in one night, you know, so we didn't give a fuck. We were pretty much, I did not care. I just wanted to collect the money. I cared about the material, but I didn't care about the product. I didn't put a lot of time in it. And it seemed like any more time and effort would have cost more money, which means I would be making less money. So, it's about the material. It's not about the crappy display. But there are also really terrible explanations too, which I never wrote out. I really didn't, you know. So there's a lot of regrets. I have regrets. You know?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I definitely do. So, Any other questions? I'm dying here. Throw me something, Caleb.
You said it was done in one day, but Forgotten Time Channel did say it's one of his coolest DVDs ever. Trying to think what all there could be. Do you have anything that you would want to talk about that we haven't already, or anything you would elaborate on that we have been talking about while I started to think of something else? How was the switch from like selling stuff on VHS to DVD? Did that affect you in any way, or do you remember that?
So yeah, I mean, like, we were able to make so much more money when DVDs came out. Like, because when DVDs were out, people were buying DVDs. And I mean, so like the money just was a great, great improvement. So, and then that ran really, I don't know, probably until like 07 or something like that, started dying down. But yeah, like DVDs, that people wanted to buy DVDs. You know what I mean? It seemed like it was more of a hot commodity. So, and it was really great too, because like Generation X hit, and I mean, I made a killing on that, you know, and it sold for a long, long time. So, DVDs sold more than VHSs when DVDs came out.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to like fit more video and stuff on it, I'm assuming, or is that anything?
Like, all my products were relatively... I put very little, show off two, and well, not Generation X, but Heckler and Card Sharp, all these things. We shot this shit that day. I mean, like, these kids work on material and they get their little pieces, and that's not how it went down, dude. We have the camera guy, we got the fucking lights, and we go through everything. It doesn't really come out good. But, you know, like, you you know, you don't want to drop 10 G's on trying to shoot something. Back in the day, like, it was like technology is so affordable and access. Like, back in the day, dude, shit was expensive. You know, you needed to have a production, and even just editing, you would have to go, shit would be on beta tapes, and you would be there with the editing deck, dude. You're paying on the hour. So it's like, it's way different now with the advancements of technology. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, like Show Off 2, all those flourishes were taped one day, you know what I mean? Like, so, yeah. Or whatever. Not Generation X. And, you know, God, dude, the explanations were so bad. I never wrote them out. Actually, what the Bucks did was really smart about just not trying to do any audio visual explanations and just kind of show the material. Wish I did that. I mean, you know, that's a good way to teach it. Like, you'll see on Instagram, you'll see people teaching things by slowing down motions, and it's all visual, you know. Which is, I think, more effective than saying, hey, you want to take this finger and do that and this, and you know. And when you're doing a complicated cuts, that's not easy to start off with, even if it's written out, you know, let alone. But I was terrible at it and didn't care. Just give me my check. Fuck them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bad.
I mean, like you said too, like, anybody nowadays can, like, make, if they have a phone, they can make a tutorial or make whatever they want. Wasn't like that.
Exactly.
Someone in the comments, Christian Kirk, he's curious what your thoughts on like Penn and Teller, or maybe like Now You See Me, some of these pop culture media things that have to deal with magic shows and movies.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Like, I used to love Penn and Teller. That has stopped back in the day. I got love for Teller. I think he's a really a very talented and knowledgeable magician. Penn Jillette is more the speaker, clearly. But I kind of like, I went to a taping, a friend of mine that was doing the Fula show, and it was really a terrible, bad experience where we are watching dead cuts of people doing material, stopping in the middle, dead cut, replant shit. I mean, it was so fucking fake to the whole audience, which was paid and cued to clap. I mean, it wasn't a live performance. It was all post-production shit. I hate that. So I can't, you know, they sold out. They sold out in my mind's eye. And there's no reason for them to do that shit. I mean, you know. So I don't know. I mean, back in the day, man, the Bad Boys of Magic, dude, I was feeling their vibe and all that. But that's changed.
Do you have any favorite magicians, or I mean, I guess a lot of the people that you were taught under, but who has, like, truly wowed you over the years?
Yeah, well, I mean, really, Paul David really legitimately was the best. The material that was out, or the only things that were taped from him, doesn't do justice. And this is not just from me. This is from Michael Ammar. Everybody agrees that I've seen the volume of objects that he would produce. This motherfucker was so hardcore, dude. He'd blind people with the eyes while executing slides with his other hand. I mean, just next level shit, man. You know, he would walk up to a table, produce a bowling ball. He just kept on hitting you nonstop. He was so far ahead. And all that close-up act shit that he would do, none of it's been taped. And it's really sad. Like, all the stuff that you see was just a taping of Derek Chen, which was followed up from, who was the one that did the Show Off too.
You know, so it's like, it's really weird, but there was nobody that fucking came close to Paul David. No one. Seriously. I mean, and he would step in and blind people. While he was blinding people, it was, you know, different motions, non-connected motions at the same time. And he wouldn't even just do that to demonstrate, you know, like a dexterous feat. He did that with his slights, you know, and it was just not, it was just keep on hitting you, dude. He produced a giant, you know, a 30 film point. Why that's out, dude. The next thing you know, he has a lug nut. And then after that, it's a bowling ball. It's just insane. He would walk up to a table and produce 55 pounds of weight, you know. It was just, yeah. So there's nobody that came close. No one. And the people that out there think that they know his material and you haven't seen it live, dude, you don't know. So it's just, I don't know, man. I've been trying to tell him that it needs to be at least somehow taped, and it's all crazy. Mm-hmm. He's old now. He's 73. He lives in Mexico. I talk to him all the time. So, he's no one even came close. So,
One thing I do like to ask on the podcast that I pretty much ask pretty much everybody is just like, what's their process when they go to create a move, or just kind of how they go about
process
trying to create something. So did you have any kind of creative process when trying to make something new?
So, yeah, I mean, one thing, like I was saying, is like there is a natural development somehow. So there is, just like if you're learning this two-hand cut, there's going to be developments by just hitting the repetitions of that, you know, and ideally, so you just keep on doing it over and over and over, and something develops, and then over and over and over. And now you're starting to do that development. And then there's another development. So it's kind of like there's like this evolution that's installed with just repetitions. Things will develop with just doing repetitions. So, and then also it's like I said, man, it's like isolation. To be in a creative process, it seemed, at least my understanding was, and that might've changed, was that I don't want to be saturated watching other people's stuff. It was a big part. Like I didn't really get in, like I wanted to be unique, where I'm not watching this dude's move and having that dude's move on my mind. I wanted to just be independent, away from everything, and just try to develop things, you know. And some things pan out, some things don't, you know.
Yeah, it is interesting too, like you said, with the repetition. Like sometimes, at least for me or people I've talked to in the past, they'll be trying to repeat the same thing and then they'll screw up at some point, or quote unquote screw up, or they'll do something different on accident, and then something develops from that accident, which I think is interesting, that some stuff will just come naturally from messing up doing what you were expecting to be doing.
One thing too is that if you try to create something and you can't do it, like I said, it's like that mechanics are in your hand and you're able to do something else. So that's a big thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Going back to the messages real quick too. Christian Kirk wanted to know what you're thinking of going, being slower to be smoother, or being faster. I know, at least back in like show off and those things, you really focused on being super fast.
Yes.
But what was your thought about speed when it comes to performing things?
Okay, so yeah, like if you wanted you, the style that I was going for was fast, which I believed at the time was rare. It's not aesthetically pleasing. It's not a really good look. There's a very a little appreciation for it, to especially the lay people. So I think that having a smoother, slower look is actually better. But I do think that being faster is rarer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not prettier. It's uglier. You know what I mean? It's more dirty. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not. But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it does have like a certain charm to it. I say there's like a lot of people can like say they can tell the difference between old cardistry and new cardistry because of things like speed, like how speed was performed back in the day. A lot of people would try to just go as fast as possible with whatever they were doing. But like you said, nobody really does that anymore. So it does stick out now, nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard. Like I don't know that many. I mean, I'm relatively new learning all the different artists. Like I really am. So I'm not really informed with all the different people and material. So I'm not really qualified to make this proper assessment about what it is now, but, yes, you have displays and then you have like manual dexterity feats, right? Those are the principles within cardistry. So it's like, hey, I'm being creative and I'm making something, or look at me do this. All right. Those are the two things. So I would say that even though I'm not seeing a lot of speed with the manual feet dexterity stuff, there's still a lot of really, really amazing shit out there. You know what I mean? So that definitely is still in place. I'm not a big display guy. If someone wants to make a whole bunch of there's manual dexterity in making displays, clearly, and those are great. I love those. But I'm talking about making flowers, and you'll see some weird shit there. Like it's not my thing. Maybe that's something bad.
I think with like the two hand cuts too, a lot of people have slowed down so that they can show off what they're doing too. So like can see the transition they're making.
Yeah. I think that's cool, dude. You don't need to be fast. No, it looks better if you got at least for the layman, they can understand it and maybe appreciate it more. You got more time for them to digest it. Yeah, they're just different styles. That's really what it is. You know, you can go fast or you can go slow. It's different looks. And I would say the slower look does look better. I mean, I generally, you know. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
So is there, I'll send this out to the people in the chat, but also you, if there's any last topics anybody wants Brian to talk about before we kind of close stuff up, because we have been going for an hour 20 now. So if anybody.
Yeah, it's weird, man. I mean, I want to smoke a cigarette, but you kids don't smoke anyways, right? I can smoke a cigarette, right?
That's fine.
That's good, man. You know, I've definitely have embraced this younger generation, which is relatively new, but it's a nice group of kids, I think. It's not, you know, like I said, it's not
they're not worried about whose material is who. And there's a lot of really positive, there's just a lot of positivity too. There's a lot of support to other people. I think it's great, man. I really do. You know?
Okay. So Brian, thanks for being on the show. At the end, I like to do what I call roll out the close-up pad, which is just my fancy way of saying, is there anything that you would like to promote or any last nugget you would like to leave the audience with before we kind of close things up?
No, but thank you. Not at the moment. I mean, you know, yeah, there's things that I was thinking of that I was going to get into. And then I was like, dude, I'm just kind of not feeling it. But maybe that's going to change. So maybe we'll do a round two. But thank you. Thank you for, you know, having me on. And you're cool. And this is cool. And, you know, it's an honor. It really is an honor. And, you know, personally hit me up. You got anything you want to talk about? Come out to Vegas, man. Hit me up. Do a, hit a session. You know, yep. Get a burger, whatever. You know? Yep.
Well, yeah, thank you for reaching out. And thank you for taking your time to be here. As always, I'll have links in the description of the video for anybody watching. If you want to subscribe to Brian's Instagram, anything like that, that's all going to be in the comments. So check that out, and we'll head out now. So cool.
Okay. All right. Caleb, thank you. Thank you very much.